This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Continue on Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. So to have here, September 27, 1773, Dartmouth, Eleanor, and Beaver left London for the American colonies, the three ships. Carrying tea, which would be destroyed upon the ship's arrival in Boston in December. Cool.
The circumstances today are a little different than they were 250 years ago. As I said, we're collecting 250 pounds of tea back with us to throw overboard on December 16th. And
so this man is Sean P. Ford of the Tea Party Ships and Museum, which are pretty darn cool to visit. They're very interesting. The ropes on those things are amazing. They're in Boston Harbor. Very cool.
That wasn't the case 250 years ago. We did it without their permission.
The story gets framed as a good and bad, a black and white sort of thing, but there's a lot of nuance. And what's...
No. There are a lot of facts that you're missing. But there's not a lot of moral nuance here. It's mercantilism. It's the state versus people. That's what it is. And those people were perfectly justified to dump that tea. Absolutely 100% justified. They were justified to do a heck of a lot more as well in the defense of themselves and their sovereignty. So there wasn't a lot of ambiguity or nuance here.
What we love about the story was that the relationship between Britain and the colonies was very close. There weren't Americans at the time. They thought of themselves as British subjects.
Well, that's also a bit of a misnomer, because over the course of 10 years, as many libertarian historians have pointed out, the Americans started to think of themselves as separate, as different, and as culturally different, economically different, and they knew that down the line, they either were going to have their representation or there was going to be a split. And many of them could recognize that the split was coming. So the idea that they consider themselves loyal British subjects is kind of wrong on a cultural level.
And a small spark like this actually changed the course of the world that we know. So it's an amazing piece to look back on and very relevant to our... as we look at things,
hey, everything in Boston originates from London and England, and that's why where we live in New England. And you'll come into England, we have all the named cities and towns. There's a lot of similarities, a lot of carbon copies, but they're very similar in architecture and feeling.
Except, of course, for the places like Winnipesaukee, Winnesquam, the Mohawk Trail, which is very important, and I highly recommend people check out the Mohawk Trail. It goes east-west, mainly west, if you're going to be really following the Mohawk Trail into the mountains in western Massachusetts. And that's where Tanglewood is located, where the Boston Pops go for the summertime, Boston Symphony Orchestra. That's where the Wagon Wheel Motel is located, if you're familiar with Morphine in the song Thursdays. Yes, indeed. And the idea that it is quite dominated by British culture, but to neglect the Indians, I think, is too bad. And maybe it's just, you know, the guy just wasn't really thinking it through all the way. Can't, you know, hand it to him all that much. But, you know, it was quite a spark, but it wasn't the only spark. You know, the Boston Tea Party, I do think that it is justifiably seen as the trigger, but there would have been other triggering events. It just so happens that these gutsy individuals went for it. Other people, I think, would have done so in some other way.
The relationship between Boston and London is so important, and I believe Boston and London have the strongest relationship out of any cities or states around the country. It's very significant for us, and I like to think Londoners know a lot about Boston more than other places.
That's a pretty good point. Hold on, just lost some of my notes there, and don't want that. We'll pause in the Boston Tea Party. I've got to get my notes up. Okay. So, December 16th, 1773. Well, let's take a quick look at some other information about the Boston Tea Party, my friends. And check this out. This is a nice little piece from the folks at thenewamerican.com. Came out on the 16th. And it's got the image that I actually used for screen cap in the preview for the Rockfin and Rumble, you know, still shot sort of preview thing. And Steve Bias writes this. Today, this being the 16th, marks the 250th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, when 342 chests with nearly 100,000 pounds of tea were dumped, it was 92,000 pounds, were dumped by the Sons of Liberty off three ships in Boston Harbor on December 16, 1773. That event touched off a series of actions and reactions that led eventually to the 13 British colonies to declare their secession from the British Empire. Unfortunately, the reasons for this drastic action are largely misunderstood in modern America. Tensions between the British government and its colonies on the eastern seaboard of North America had been rising for years. After the British won the French and Indian War, the colonists no longer felt threatened by the French and thus felt less dependent upon the mother country. When the British attempted to impose direct taxes on goods produced in the colonies with the hated stamp tax in 1765, in order to help pay for the late war, colonial resistance was so great that the tax was eventually repealed. Ah, but they didn't forget. Before this, colonists had largely accepted taxes on trade. But now, even these taxes, which raised the price of imported goods, were increasingly resented. One good that was quite popular in both England and the colonies was tea. In response, many colonists stopped drinking tea. In January 1770, for example, 538 women in Boston agreed to boycott tea as long as it was taxed. Some women turned to substitutes, such as coffee and even raspberry leaves. The British East India Company, losing so much of its American market, was facing bankruptcy. Their solution was to persuade Parliament to enact the Tea Act of May 10, 1773, which allowed the tea to be shipped duty-free, special favors compared to the others. In other words, their competition would be taxed to the colonies. Remember that, tariff supporters. And once there, the company would hold a monopoly on the sale of tea, cutting out colonial merchants. Why did Parliament opt to give them such a sweet deal? That so many members of Parliament were shareholders in the company could have had something to do with it. Unfortunately, the granting of monopolies to favored companies by legislative bodies is still practiced today, aka mercantilism. And tariffs are a percentage of mercantilism. So stay away from them. They're immoral and they're anti-economic. And it's still practiced today in our own country. The Federal Reserve System is a prime example. When the three vessels carrying the tea, the Dartmouth, the Eleanor, and the Beaver, leave it to Beaver, arrived in Boston Harbor, they were not allowed to unload their cargo. Other port cities also did not allow the unloading of the monopoly tea. So, of course, what was the answer, everybody? They just sat there. They just sat there, and a standoff started. And that standoff was going to blow to something after a while. That is for darn sure. Other port cities also did not allow the unloading of the monopoly tea. When the owners of the ship asked permission to return the tea to Britain, the British appointed governor of Massachusetts refused. Now, just as a quick aside, folks, if you look at some of the British statutes on exports coming out of the United States, not just on imports, but on exports, furs and things like that, they literally had such mercantilist policies that if you were a trader bringing stuff from New England or the East Coast of the United States over to Europe and you stopped in England first, they would make sure that you had a certain percentage of British sailors on your ships. And you couldn't take your stuff to another European port unless you then visited multiple British ports. You had, and at every one of those, you had to pay the port overseer. So there was this massive interconnected problem, historically speaking, between the British East India Company as they did their monopolistic practices on the eastern seaboard of the United States, and the United States traders being taken advantage of by British port owners over there. So that was also an amazing thing. I mean, literally, if you had a certain percentage of sailors who weren't British, you would have to bump off a number of your sailors and leave them on the shore, or they'd have to get onto another boat. It was absolutely crazy. And it was all for the favoritist mercantilist system that had grown there. So a bit of history there that, you know, I used to color stuff in the classes, things like that, every once in a while for the students to be like, yeah, check this out. Here's Portsmouth, or here's Bristol. Here's what was going on in Bristol Harbor, right? So anyway, and Bristol is a really amazing city, really cool place. The British appointed governor of Massachusetts refused. On the evening of December 16th, 1773, several hundred members and supporters of the Sons of Liberty, and the core of the Sons of Liberty were called the Mechanics, and they would meet, as I mentioned, at the Green Dragon Inn, which is still extant. It's just been moved like 100 feet or 150 feet from where it originally was located. That's where it's the Green Dragon Inn. If you ever want to go there, I have a lot of cool memorabilia, stuff for Sam Adams and stuff like that. And by the way, John Adams has had, as milquetoast as John Adams was, John Adams was actually very, very supportive and, praiseful of the Sons of Liberty and what the, Boston Tea Party did. And I mean, it was pretty darn radical. Those guys, a lot of them were drunk. They were not peaceful. They started fires. They did a lot of stuff there that was, you know, criminal activity, especially for virtually anybody. But they were destroying the property of the people who already were taking advantage of them. So it was like fighting back against the mafia. On the evening of December 16th, 1773, several hundred members and supporters of the Sons of Liberty used small boats to row out to the three ships and over the course of about 3 hours, proceeded to dump all the tea into the water. The next day, the Committee of Correspondence, like the Sons of Liberty, the creation of Boston Patriot Samuel Adams, and that beer is still around, and they try to stay to that tradition. I think pretty liberty-minded people sent Paul Revere with a report of the action to New York and Philadelphia. King George III and Parliament reacted angrily to the news, declaring Massachusetts to be in rebellion and passing a series of laws they dubbed the Coercive Acts. Well, all acts are coercive. These laws, which the colonists named the Intolerable Acts, closed the port of Boston until the tea was paid for and placed Massachusetts under a military dictatorship led by General Thomas Gage. The ensuing battles of Lexington and Concord, or as they sometimes say outside of Massachusetts or New England, Concord, like it's some sort of supersonic jet that could fly still, but the feds won't let it. Lexington and Concord were the shots heard round the world. Where the shots heard round the world were fired were less than 2 years away. So, they say many Americans at the time, including patriots who opposed British policies, were embarrassed by the lawless action with its destruction of private property, so-called. Of course, it was a corporation. It's not really private. But it certainly fit the goal of Samuel Adams, the leader of the Sons. Adams did not ask for all colonists to approve of the action, or even of some of the other activities of his group. He noted, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. Good stuff. Good stuff right there, everybody. And I want to get your thoughts on this as well, as one of the links hops in. Wants to be a guest star. It's Leo, and he's awesome. That's the one I saved a couple years ago. He had a lung infection. I was singing to him in the car, brought him to the vets. Here he comes. Hey, buddy. He wants to look inside the fridge. He loves to look inside the fridge. You can see his tail on the screen. So there you go. Let me turn the camera and you can see him a little bit here. There he is. Hey, buddy. Oh, no. You can't go up there. All right, going to have to take him down. Sorry about that. All right. There he goes. All right. It was brief. It was a brief sojourn for the Leo man. Okay. So I hope you don't mind me messing with the camera just to show you a cat, but they really are great. And they're not as big as, you know, like lynx in the wild. They're crossbred, but they're larger, much larger than regular cats. They're probably, you know, 20 pounds each and, probably half a foot to 8 inches to 12 inches bigger than, longer than regular cats. Big cats. So, and again, if you want to look up anything about lynx, just go to the Lynx Hybrid channel on YouTube or just look up Lynx Hybrids and you'll see the videos of them. They're absolutely wonderful. They're amazing creatures. So I want to show you something else though. And this one is an absolutely fantastic piece that was put together by some acquaintances at the American Battlefield Trust. And, and a little bit later I might show an MRC TV video. I really don't mind showing videos of some of the folks that, I've met in the past or something like that. Maybe, you know, three quarters, sometimes a whole video once in a while of the people I really like, you know, show some segments so I can attract people to their work. So check out American Battlefield Trust, not necessarily anarchists or anything like that, but really interesting on their history. And I think you'll like this one. This has great coverage of the whole story. And here we go. It's from them. And when did they even publish this? I don't even know what year this came out. I think it might be a republishing, but it says a day ago because I remember something like this a while back. But here we go. Check it out, everybody. Check it out now.
December 16th, 1773, Boston Harbor. By the end of the night, 342 chests of tea would be dumped into the harbor. Known as the Boston Tea Party, this event was a protest against taxation and British mercantilism. In some ways, the event had been brewing for 10 years. Following the end of the French and Indian War, Britain wanted to tax the colonies and regain some of the money that had been spent for their protection. This violated two principles. First, the idea that the colonies were governed directly by the king. Second, the theory of mercantilism, which said that a mother country would protect the colonies since they provided a vast amount of income. As Parliament tried to take control and levy taxes, American colonists protested. A series of acts and taxes led to boycotts, protests, and creative resistance. By 1773, Parliament had repealed most of the unpopular tax acts. However, the Tea Act remained. Created by Parliament to financially rescue the floundering East India Tea Company, the Tea Act gave a monopoly and several other financial breaks to the company, allowing them to exclusively sell tea in the American colonies.
Had a brush with the East India Trading Company, did we?
Yeah.
Pirates?
When three ships of the East India Tea Company stood off Boston Harbor, protesting colonists refused to allow the ships to unload the cargo. But the Royalist governor of Massachusetts refused to allow the ships to leave. On September 16th, the Sons of Liberty reacted. Putting on disguises inspired by the Native American Mohawk tribe warriors, the colonists headed for the harbor. Their costumes had symbolic meaning, since both British and colonials recognized Native Americans as a group that did not want to be ruled by European powers. The disguised Sons of Liberty boarded the three ships, and for the next 3 hours diligently unloaded the tea into Boston Harbor. It's estimated that 92,000 pounds of tea were emptied into Boston Harbor that night, and the estimated value of that lost cargo was around $1,700,000 in modern U.S. currency. Samuel Adams, a leader of the Sons of Liberty, insisted that the Boston Tea Party was not the actions of a mob, but rather a protest of colonists who were asserting the idea, no taxation without representation. The British governor, Parliament, and the king viewed the Boston Tea Party as rebellion, and in response instituted the Intolerable Acts, which included closing the Boston Harbor to trade. Though the start of the American Revolution and the shot heard around the world was still more than a year and a half away, the Boston Tea Party was a major moment in the road to rebellion and eventual independence for the American colonies. John Adams, a relative of Samuel Adams, noted in his diary a few days after the Boston Tea Party, "This is the most magnificent movement of all. There is a dignity, a majesty, a sublimity in this last effort of the patriots that I greatly admire. The people should never rise without doing something to be remembered, something notable and striking. This destruction of the tea is so bold, so daring, so firm, intrepid, and inflexible, and it must have so important consequences and so lasting that I can't but consider it as an epoch in history."
I like that. That's good stuff. Let me just fix the cam here a little bit, everybody. And, yeah, okay, that's good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. And just want to mention, everyone, I want to blow this up again. If you want to find, I'll take myself off. If you want to find it, it's Boston Tea Party, The Revolutionary War in 4 Minutes. It's a nice little succinct thing. And what I'll do is I'll show this again. It's from the American Battlefield Trust. And they got a ton of subscribers, almost 400,000 subscribers already. We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash masternodes. The masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by the treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to use and get Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to produce an endless supply of nano-sized silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. Silver Lung. With the addition of our unique lung delivery system, respiratory infections are targeted directly, where traditional oral administration simply cannot reach. This pioneering method also preserves the original particle sizes and delivers your silver solution directly into the bloodstream. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
USA News Update. Friday, the special counsel overseeing the prosecution of former President Trump for alleged election crimes faced a setback. The Supreme Court, at least for the time being, has decided not to consider a case regarding whether Trump is immune from prosecution for alleged crimes during his presidency. The High Court rejected a request from federal prosecutor Jack Smith to expedite the proceedings related to Trump's purported efforts to overturn the 2020 election. An important economic gauge reveals that inflation is on the rise, albeit at a rate lower than what experts had anticipated. In November, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index increased 0.1%, marking a 3.2% rise from the same period a year ago. And residents in the Midwest and Northeast may find their dreams of a white Christmas dash this year. Forecasters say the remaining patches of snow on the ground will disappear by Christmas Day. John Schaefer, USA News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I Medical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. We return with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble and Rockfin and my Twitter feed at Gard Goldsmith. That's G-A-R-D Goldsmith. You can also find my Substack. It's Gardner Goldsmith, G-A-R-D-N-E-R. Just look it up under Substack. And every Sunday, you can receive the Sunday News Assembly with 20 stories I put together that might have a bearing on your liberty, plus contextual information to carry out of those stories long-term lessons for freedom. Let's continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thank you, 10th Amendment Center. You guys rock. Okay, so you see that in the small screen, and there we go. This is Chris Ann Hall, and she wrote this quite a while ago, 11 years ago, August 6, 2012. And she wrote about the real origin of the Tea Party movement. Now, if you're not familiar with the Tea Party movement from, what was it, 2011, that stands for Taxed Enough Already, okay? And there was a guy on CNBC who brought it up, you know, we're taxed enough already. We ought to start something called the Tea Party movement, you know? And it caught fire. The first Tea Party meeting actually happened not as an official Tea Party meeting. And that happened in Boston on the anniversary. And I was there for the Boston Tea Party. And that's where Rand Paul and I went back to the Green Dragon Inn with a group of people. We were hanging out. It was really crazy because we hadn't had power in my town for like 11 days. My mother had just passed away. It was an absolute mess. It was absolutely crazy. And, you know, I'd known Rand for a little bit since maybe 2008. And Rand said, you know, that's where he asked me, you know, do you think I should run for Senate? And I'm sure he was asking a bunch of people. And I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. I wouldn't take an office, but if you think you can, you know, do something good and reduce the size of government, it's up to you, you know. And so It was interesting. It was very interesting. And literally, I hadn't been able to take a shower for like 3 days or 4 days. It was ridiculous. You know, you're trying to like get some water warmed up and, you know, sponge yourself off. It was insane. And there was one day, because we had no power, there was one day, because, of course, it's a power monopoly here and they don't take care of things properly. There was one day where it warmed up the way it has here today, got near 60 degrees. It was actually warmer outside than it was in the house, which had become like a refrigerator. So I opened all the windows up and I actually ate my lunch outside. It was crazy, but not that day. That day was very, very cold. So here's a little bit more of that context. I'm going to blow this up for you so you can see it. Writes Chris Ann Hall in 2012, I recently read with joy a conservative blogger's attempt to connect the Tea Party movement to its historical roots, a topic I've been meaning to write about for months now. The blogger rightly said that the historical precedent for the Tea Party movement wasn't the Tea Party event in Boston Harbor on December 16, 1773. I actually uttered an amen, brother. He went on to describe the Continental Association established on October 20th, 1774 by the First Continental Congress in response to the Intolerable Acts, otherwise known as the Coercive Acts. That's when I realized I have waited long enough to write this article. So these are nice little peeling of the onion, peeling of the apple, maybe a little tastier. The fact is, the Continental Association of 1774, 10 months after the Boston Tea Party, is about 10 years too late. The first organized opposition to a tyrannical government in the colonies came in 1764 in the form of the Committees of Correspondence. In April 1764, Parliament passed the Sugar and Molasses Act. These acts, plural, these laws were originally passed in 1733 at the insistence of the large plantation owners in the British West Indies. Can you say lobbyists? Mercantilism, of course. The sixpence tax of 1733 actually was never successfully collected. And so in 1764, the Sugar Act actually cut that original tax in half, but stepped up enforcement of the tax. At the same time, the Sugar Act taxed the sugar, coffee, wine, and spices the colonists used, and also regulated, in other words, controlled for favoritism reasons, the export of lumber and iron. This, quote, excessive taxation and regulation, end quote, immediately impaired the colonial economy. In conjunction with the Sugar Act, Parliament passed the Currency Act, which established assumed control of the colonial monetary system. The Currency Act also established superior vice admiralty courts to ensure rulings favorable to British interests. Does it remind you of something? Say, oh, I don't know, Gitmo, FISA, special favors to pork, of pork handouts to special businesses, cronyism. We're going to direct the economy of the future, future, future with our friends. In 1764, the colonies were in the midst of a depressed economy due to the protracted 7 years' war. So these indirect taxes and restrictive laws were particularly grievous. In addition to the economic impact, the psychological impact was particularly offensive. The Sugar Act, again, 1764, making it more enforced, the Sugar Act not only restricted the exports by the colonists, but gave an economic leg up to the British West Indies. Yeah, why not? This reinforced the second-class status often attributed to the colonists by the British mainlanders. Again, as I said, they felt like they were apart for many years before this. So the assumption that they considered themselves British was not really culturally the case. The ports of New England were hit especially hard due to the taxes, regulation, and government interference. Many of the merchants were in danger of being driven out of the market into bankruptcy. So in 1764, and by the way, let's talk lockdowns, energy restrictions, restrictions on energy imports, and a report that I just got to release at MRC TV today. You might have seen it in my Substack Sunday News Assembly about Hasbro toys. We'll tell you about that in a minute. We'll just bounce off of this. So in 1764, the first grassroots opposition to tyranny in the colonies took shape in the form of a committee of correspondence in Boston. By the way, that was highly illegal. That was massively illegal. The colonists did not have email, smartphones, Facebook, or blogs, so the committees of correspondence served as a means of communication on issues that needed collective attention. Collective, wink, wink. The committee in Boston wrote to other colonies to rally united opposition to the Sugar Act and the Currency Act, sparking anti-government protests among the colonists. On the heels of these protests, the Parliament, deciding to clamp down on the rebellious colonists, passed the first Stamp Act and Quartering Act of 1765. And, of course, we still have a quartering that's happening now. We just house those soldiers on our own dime in many other countries and occupy them. The Quartering Act and Stamp Act of 1765, and New York formed its Committee of Correspondence to rally resistance to the new taxes and tyranny. Massachusetts Bay Committee then sent out letters urging other colonies to send representatives to a Stamp Act Congress in the fall. As a decade of hostility between the royal government and the colonists rolled on, Boston set up the first committee with the approval of a town meeting 1772. By spring 1773, patriots decided to follow the Massachusetts system and began to set up their own committees in each colony. By February 1774, 11 colonies had set up committees of correspondence. The committees would eventually be the basis for the Continental Congress and the Continental Association of 1774. As the revolutionary period unfolded, the committees of correspondence would become the basis for the future legislative bodies in America. Yet it all began in 1764 as a citizen movement in response to an oppressive government that would not respond to or respect the wishes of the people. Two of the men behind the movement were Sam Adams and James Otis Jr. Mr. Otis was an attorney who had gained notoriety for his pro bono representation of colonial merchants challenging the authority of the writs of assistance in 1761. These writs enabled British authorities to enter any colonist's home with no advance notice, no probable cause, and no reason given. Sort of like red flag laws from the Redcoats. Today, these writs are called national security letters. Ah, yes, good point. I forgot about that. And are authorized under the Patriot Act. How ironic. John Adams said of Otis's five-hour oration in the Boston State House that, quote, "The child independence was then and there born for every man of an immense crowded audience appeared to me to go away as I did, ready to take arms against writs of assistance." Also speaking of Otis, John Adams said, quote, "I have been young and now I am old, and I solemnly say I have never known a man whose love of country was more ardent or sincere, never one who suffered so much, never one whose service for any 10 years of his life was so important and essential to the cause of his country as those of Mr. Otis from 1760 to 1770. What country was he mentioning? America, not the British. Better known was Samuel Adams, a representative of the local Boston Assembly and member of the Massachusetts House of Representatives. Samuel Adams had this to say in May of 1764, quote, "For if our trade be taxed, why not our lands? Why not the produce of our lands and everything we possess or make use of? This, we apprehend, annihilates our charter right to govern and tax ourselves. It strikes at our British privileges, which, as we have never forfeited them, we hold in common with our fellow subjects who are natives of Britain. If taxes are laid upon us in any shape, without our having a legal representation where they are laid, are we not reduced to the character of free subjects, to the miserable state of tributary slaves? Samuel Adams would later organize the Sons of Liberty, which coordinated the Boston Tea Party in 1773. But let's not forget the ladies of the Tea Party movement, Penelope Barker of Edenton, North Carolina. She organized the Edenton Tea Party in 1774 in the home of her friend Elizabeth King. She and 50 other women signed a declaration and sent it to be published in a London newspaper. In part, the declaration said, quote, maybe it has not been men who have protested the king up to now. Maybe it has only been men who protested the king up to now. That only means we women have taken too long to let our hearts be heard. We are signing our names to a document, not hiding ourselves behind costumes like the men in Boston did at their tea party. The British will know who we are. We, the aforesaid ladies, will not promote ye ware of any manufacturer from England until such time that all acts which tend to enslave our native country shall be repealed. Interesting stuff. You can always find great stuff at the 10th Amendment Center. There's another one. I hope you'll consider contributing to them. Very, very good stuff. And from that, I want to now think a little bit about the story over at MRC TV that might not get as much attention as some of the other ones. But I do want to bring it up just briefly. There'll probably be a video out about this tomorrow. I expected it today, but they put out another video from my friend Nick. But just to let you know, the lockdowns, the taxes, the increase of the corporate tax by Herr Führer, royal king of the Napoleon of the Biden family, has seen technically the second largest toy manufacturer, but if you consider Legos more like construction materials and not a toy, then they would be the largest toy manufacturer in the world. But they're the largest toy manufacturer in America, Hasbro. They just laid off one-fifth of their workforce, everybody. Yeah, not good. And I mentioned that in the Sunday News Assembly. And I wrote, at Christmas time, Americans often accessorize their celebration of the birth of Christ with childhood memories of family, friends, surprises, songs, decorations, and so on. We also remember the 1970 Rankin and Bass stop-motion musical Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which, although it doesn't have much to do with Christ, does provide memories of the Burgermeister Meisterburger and how he dictated, no more toys! And I said he even sang a song about it. So one has to wonder with this news whether or not Joe Biden could be seen as the Burgermeister. And I write, Jordan Andrews wrote this for State of the Union. Hasbro, one of the world's largest toy makers, is cutting 1,100 jobs, or about 20% of its workforce, due to the challenging market conditions, including so-called historic pandemic-driven highs and continued headwinds. Yeah. In other words, the lockdown has nailed them. This is Christmas time, I said. This is the biggest toy selling period of the year. In other words, this not only is sad and tragic for the employees, which is the key, but it also is very alarming for others. It's alarming for those concerned about the continued inflationary policies of the fiat money creators at the Federal Reserve. It's alarming for those concerned about the resultant malinvestment of this fake easy cash. And it's alarming for those concerned about the inevitable economic contraction and liquidation, in this case of jobs, that result from this central bank-created, central government-promoted boom-bust cycle. In fact, if one were to engage in something that Vice President Kamala Harris seems to love, which is drawing Venn diagrams, then all those circles that I mentioned of those people with concerns above would probably overlay one another because they're aware of the dangers of central banking and the inflationary spiral it creates and the boom-bust cycle it creates. Indeed, I said, this news is alarming for anyone with a semblance of an understanding of economics, which means that the folks of the Biden administration likely either won't notice or won't want to discuss it. Adds Andrew, CEO Chris Cox cited persistent difficulties and indicated that the company will vacate its Providence, Rhode Island headquarters when the lease expires in January 2025. Well, if only they had gotten involved making, oh, I don't know, windmills or, you know, gotten involved with those solar panels or something like that, they probably could have been subsidized even if they were going bankrupt. You know, like Proterra. Why not stay? Well, just a year. Oh, I said, heck, why not stay? Why not keep pumping out toys during a time that has seen prices skyrocket 17.7% since Joe Biden took office? Why not stay when just a year ago Hasbro acknowledged that it had to raise prices due to higher transport costs? Oh, can't imagine what could be causing higher transport costs. Why not keep the corporation spending and investing in resources, including labor resources, when Joe Biden and his money-hungry pals in Congress have drastically increased business taxes? Surely now that the Biden administration has restored the U.S. corporate tax to its old status as the highest in the so-called developed world, lifting it from Trump's 21% to 28%, it would be a really, really good idea for business people not to cut expenses by cutting jobs and not to consider moving shop to some other nation. And gosh, the folks who work for Hasbro and live in Rhode Island have such an easy time with the state tax collectors. Surely living in one of the most tax unfriendly states for earnings and property taxes is tons of fun, and everyone enjoys the threats of the tax men. Little something there. Just give that to you real quick if you want to check it out. It's at the MRC TV website. And I appreciate anybody who goes over. If you want to give me comments, anything like that, you can comment under the stories. Or, of course, you can send me a message over on Twitter/X. It's at Gard Goldsmith. And on Gab, I'm at Gardner Goldsmith. So please do hang out and do so if you want to give a comment inside Rockfin. I'm looking over there right now. Karen Carpenter, great to have you there, Karen. And yeah, you know, I thought I would open with those nice memories and stuff and wonderful memories. And one of the best things is to help create those memories for other people. I really enjoy that. You know, some of the comments that my niece would give. Her birthday's on the 23rd, and then we have, you know, Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day. And some of the things that I remember, you know, sharing with her or some of my friends, or my mom, my dad, my grandparents. That's just awesome stuff, you know. Karen, thanks for being there. And she says, great memories of Santa every year at my parents' house. My dad sitting on Santa's lap. We all got a gift my parents bought ahead of time. Fun times. Yeah, awesome, awesome stuff. And, of course, not necessarily about Saint Nick, but pretty cool. You know, it's an amazing time to consider. Want to head over into Rumble and also want to talk to, let's see, we've got LT Oracle of Truth is there. Risha M is there. Obsolete Man 1776. Thank you very much. Obsolete Man says, boo the crown. Yes, indeed. Yes. The only crown that I recognize is the crown of thorns that was worn on my behalf, I think. So, boy, oh boy, amazing. But with that stated, everybody, I do want to get into another topic. And this one is just a quick one that's going to separate what we discussed from going into our story about the Bill of Rights. And in fact, let me just bring this up to you real quick here. Okay. So if you get the opportunity, check out the Substack page, my Sunday News Assembly. And I won't go into, like, super detail on it, that sort of thing. A couple of the stories, we got to discuss these a little while ago. But I want to remind you of this one. Congress has approved a bill, antiwar.com. This is the first story that I put up there. They have approved a bill that would make it impossible for any president to leave NATO. Oh, okay. You mean leave that unconstitutional body? He's not supposed to be funding through congressional outlays of money. He's supposed to say, no, I'm not going to give that money to NATO. No, I'm not going to send weapons over to NATO. No, NATO is massively unconstitutional. That one? Now you're passing a statute that says any future president can't leave NATO? Oh, okay. How long has it been since the Bill of Rights was passed? A lot of years? What was that, 1791? What? Let's talk about the Bill of Rights right now, my friends. We need some music for that.
This is a public service announcement.
It was done by the policeman. Know your rights.
Know your rights. You have the right to food money.
You have the right to your food money.
But that is good. You don't mind a little investigation, humiliation.
Good stuff from the Clash. Joe Strummer. I have a friend who loved Joe Strummer so much. His daughter's middle name is Strummer. Very, very cool. Well, everybody, let's take an opportunity to look at the anniversary of the Bill of Rights. We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, Liberty Conspiracy can be found every Monday through Friday starting at 6 Eastern Time in the evening. You can listen to us and watch us on my Twitter feed at Guard Goldsmith. You can also participate and watch and listen inside the chat rooms at Rumble and at Rockfin. Watch the shows there while we're going live or after the fact. Just look for Liberty Conspiracy.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.